Waddle and Sylvie. Follow us on the gram at Waddle and Sylvie
and at ESPN underscore Chicago.
This is Chicago's home for sports. ESPN 1000.
Pull up your pants, take off the bra, and be a man.
Hey, girl.
Beautiful Wednesday in the city of Chicago, right smack dab in the middle of State Street, right smack dab in the middle of summer. And we're talking about a championship to start.
Fortunately, not ours.
Not ours, no.
Unless you're a Bucks fan.
It is, yeah, I don't have the hate, like I told you yesterday, from Milwaukee.
You've grown up quite a bit.
Well, the Bucks, I mean, it's never really been a, you know, like when I was younger and Terry Cummings and... Ricky Pierce and some of the other players, Sidney Moncrief,
smooth as silk.
Before Craig Hodges came to the Bulls, he was on the Bucks. Yeah, it was like that was one of the teams.
Bob Lanier.
Yeah, I think you're going back before me. Before those teams. Yes. Bob Lanier, didn't he have like a size 20 something shoe?
I believe so.
I think one of the biggest feet in NBA history.
Not only was he a Hall of Famer, he had a giant shoe.
A giant shoe, like Will Perdue-esque.
Yes, his left foot was about a 14, his right foot was a 21.
No, it wasn't.
Yeah.
What? No. What are you talking about? And he would tilt. He couldn't run straight. He would only run around in a circle.
Why, yes, he limped a bit. Yeah. No, but you're right. He was.
Let me see if I got, like, you always know this weird trivia.
Yeah, I'm joking.
No, no, I know you're joking. I want to see if I was right about that Bob Lanier.
Yeah. Plus 20.
Yeah.
20 like, plus. 21, 22. No doubt. I will confirm
22,
that.
22, yeah. I Googled Bob Lanier foot size, and 22 comes, it's the first thing to come up.
When the enormous shoe conversation first appeared in my life, it was about Bob Lanier.
Yes, that's what I remember.
Yes, it's the first time I actually had heard about enormous feet, and Bob Lanier was the guy who had the largest foot.
Yeah. I remember that. Do you remember the store Churnin's? It's a shoe store. It was down here in the city.
Yeah.
They had one in Morton Grove when I was growing up, and I think they even had in the store like a display of a size 22, and it would be like, if this was Bob Lanier's shoe, this is how big it would be.
Yeah, everybody grab an oar. We're going to go boating in the Chicago River. We're going to get in the shoe.
Weird Milwaukee Bucks trivia for 500.
I'm trying to think. Like, if you give me time, I can come up with some more stuff, too. Because I remember, I told you, when I was growing up in Cincinnati, I watched a ton of basketball on Channel 9. It was
sure, the superstation.
Yes. So, I mean, I remember the days of Orlando Woolridge and, you know, everybody else that was part of that team. And obviously you would watch them play all these other teams.
Right.
That's how I was indoctrinated into the NBA.
Yeah. Like, and there were some, you know, decent Bulls Bucks stuff, but nothing to make me like really have a hatred for the Bucks. Like the Packers, it's Bears Packers. That's right. Where it starts when you're a Chicago sports fan, right?
Yes.
It's
Bulls, Knicks, or Bulls, Pistons.
Bulls,
it's not
Pistons
Bulls,
for me when I grew up. And I like a lot of these NBA rivalries don't they don't go over eras. You know what I mean? Like, is Bulls Knicks still maybe now again, but there were many years that it wasn't a rivalry. Bulls Pistons hasn't been a rivalry since the Bad Boy days.
Right.
Football stands the test of time. Baseball usually stands the test of time. The Brewers, yeah, the Brewers are a pretty good rival. I have more of a hatred for the Brewers than I do the Bucks. But right now, that area, that state, because they're not all Milwaukee's teams. You know, what they've had with quarterbacks.
Yeah.
Each of them, Brett Favre and Aaron Rodgers, have each won a Super Bowl. The Brewers are better than the Cubs right now.
Right now they are.
And the Bucks are the champions. I mean, like, if we had the success that the state of Wisconsin is going, we'd be going crazy.
Well, and the Wisconsin Badgers have probably accomplished more as a collegiate athletic department than anyone around here.
Well,
right?
Their basketball team went to a championship game and lost and went to another Final Four. It's pretty incredible.
It is. I'd like to be known as Title Town sometime soon. I'm getting old. I'm 54. I'd like to know. And I think didn't we have this conversation prior to the baseball season starting? Like the closest thing that we have to a title right now is no doubt it's a White Sox.
The White Sox. It's not another thriller last night. Yeah. I mean, like, and you look at Tampa, Tampa's another one that you're like, wow, the Bucks just won.
The Rays are always good.
The Rays are always good, and the Lightning won back to back. You know, that's pretty good. We always used to model Boston, you know. Boy, if we could ever be Boston. Yeah, when they were all winning titles. Big the and Bruins nothing. And yeah. the Celtics and the Red Sox and the Patriots. That's the gold standard.
Well, I was going to say, I would suggest to you that in modern sports history, Boston is still walking with their chest puffed yes, out more than are. Anybody.
But for a small market,
yeah, no
what, what the state of Wisconsin has been able to do with the Bucks, the Brewers, and the Packers is pretty remarkable.
Well, and this is what makes this title, I think, even, you know, not to be cheesy or corny or anything, but what makes this a really good story is you see how that town has embraced that team. 65,000 people outside the building.
And again, you always say you never know how tall somebody is until you really see them. Like, yeah. We're talking about Bob Lanier's shoe. Like, when Alonzo Mourning came in studio one day, you're like, boy, you just don't know how tall 6'11 is until you really look it in the eye.
Bill Wennington. You know how many times you stood next to Bill Wennington and go, I knew you were tall, brother.
But man,
my God.
But the same goes for, like, these crowds. You know 65,000 is a lot when it's all sort of spread out in a big stadium. You know yeah. what I mean? They fit more people in those couple of fields they have than we do on a Sunday football game on the lakefront.
Yeah.
We have 61-5 at Soldier Field. And like, I showed my wife, it was yesterday was so good that it was the first time in a long time. Usually she'll go upstairs and watch Bravo. I'll hit the basement because there are multiple games on. So I had NBA screen one. I had White Sox screen two, Cubs screen three. And she watched the game with me. We had missed the Deer District when they showed it live, so I showed it to her on Twitter. I go, watch this. And the drone or whatever sort of camera they have flying over it, and it just kept going and going and going. And you're like, wow, you know 65,000 is a lot. You don't really know how, in a field like that how many people that is until you get that drone flyover. It's incredible.
Well, we could have the same thing in Arlington Heights.
Yes, one day we maybe can. If the yeah. Bears are good, I mean...
Well, I'm just saying, you could put together a scenario structurally where you could have 80,000 indoors and 60,000 outdoors.
What do you think?
I mean, you guys remember Wrigleyville when... Well, I mean, you guys were in Cleveland, but you couldn't move in Wrigleyville.
How many people did they
stadium?
Say were in Wrigleyville?
But Chris was there. You couldn't walk through the streets of Wrigleyville without being in a crowd of people from all around the stadium, down Clark Street. Like, it was nuts.
Yeah, that's true.
And that's what I was saying, Abdallah, too, about our bars and restaurants. Like, I know Milwaukee's got good bars. I'm not saying they don't have good bars. But that's more of a town where you can say, hey, everyone gather here at this location. It's a smaller area. Like, it's not such a spread-out city. We're so big, and we have so many bars that are full to capacity, neighborhood bars, bars in the West Loop, bars downtown, bars in River North.
You can't get people to congregate.
Bars in Wrigleyville, yeah. bars in Lincoln Park, where it's sort of like, would people forego those experiences with how great our city is with great bars and restaurants to gather in a field and to watch a game? You know what I mean?
Like, no, I know.
I don't think New York would do it either.
No.
You know?
That's what I'm saying. That's what makes that title and those fans and all of it. I mean, it's a cool, special thing that occurred because I'm with you. I don't think you would get 65,000 people or even how many were they getting prior to this closeout game?
It was like 30, right?
Which like, was a big number. Where are you going to get 30,000 people to watch a game here in Chicago?
U.S. soccer do this in Grand Park during World Cup a couple of times.
They tried.
And all the bars were full then, but also there were hundreds of people out in Grand Park.
Well, and it's a good, I think it's a good example, and there may be something more to that it's, you know, it's a unifying sport and we're all, you know, you don't have different team affiliations.
Yeah,
I don't know.
I mean, listen, no offense, and I'm a White Sox fan. That ain't happening for the Sox right. this fall. Like, it's going to be a smaller setting, but like, it would have to be the Bears. In this city, yeah. it would have to be the Bears.
It would have to be 2029 outside the new, whatever it's called, let's call it Rivers Stadium
yeah.
In Arlington Heights. Justin Fields and the Bears are embarking on their second Super Bowl run. And that's a freshly stadium that was built in 2028. And we're all on road games and home games gathering at Arlington Heights because of how cool the vibe is.
Yes.
But I don't know if city people would want to jump up there. You know, maybe it's more of a suburban thing. It's so damn 8 million people spread out about how many miles from the northern suburbs to the south and the western burbs, you know?
Well, that's why I think it's a unique thing, because I don't know how many different towns would get 65,000 people outside to watch that game throughout its entirety. I'm not talking about the parade. I'm talking about watching games in one area. Yeah. That's a pretty cool thing that occurred last night.
Here's Mike Breen yesterday when they were flying over the Deer District with 65,000.
A reminder, the future starts now. Watch this year's draft class take the stage and begin the next chapter in their basketball journey. The NBA Draft, Thursday, July 29th at 8 p.m. on ABC. At ESPN.
Dr. Fauci is cringing at home as he's watching our game.
Very difficult to socially distance outside.
So he was reading a promo and the screen was showing the Deer District. And then, of course, like only JVG can, Jeff Van Gundy, with a remark about Fauci. And it was great, though. I mean, like, how could you not love that? Like, I know they're the rivals. Every one of their teams are in our, like, my favorite team's division. The Bucks are in the Bulls division. The Brewers are in the Cubs division. They used to be in the White Sox division. And then you have the Bears and the Packers. But still, I love Giannis.
Well, that's the thing, too.
I loved the vibe. I love a story of a city that hasn't had a title for 50 years like that.
Yeah.
With the basketball team.
There's no black hat here. There's no villain. There's only a white hat. You know what I mean? So I don't think there's as much angst directed at the Bucks as there would be for another team. There's a perception that they did it the right way. Giannis did not move. He signed with his team and that they've done it the right way. He's one of the most, I heard Carmen, the good kid, they had a good poll question, who's the most likable superstar athlete in the world right now? And I think their options were Patrick Mahomes, Shohei Ohtani, and Giannis. And I think they're all good choices, and you can make a case for all of them.
And you could add men, and they had another. Yeah. We should discuss that. I thought it was a great poll question, I'll give you the results.
But I think that, you know, that adds to the likability of them, is that their star player is a guy that most people, you know, think a lot of.
He's very humble. Very humble. 312-332-3776. I said on the show yesterday at this time that was the most excited I've been for an NBA game in 2 years. The bubble didn't do much for me. Did you enjoy it as much as we did? What was your prevailing thought? Does it have to do with the Bulls? Like, one thought out there is, can Zach LaVine be Devin Booker next year? What about maybe, hey, this shows you don't need a super team. You don't need to recruit. You don't need to organize guys together. Maybe it's just how much fun you think Giannis is. Carmen threw this out. Did Giannis have perhaps the best NBA Finals game we ever had? I think you can make an argument that Giannis had one of the best finals that any NBA player has ever had. And I want to share that with you coming up and what I was thinking in comparison with LeBron, too. So let's open up the phone lines, 332-3776, if you want to react to the NBA Finals, whatever was on your mind watching that game yesterday. We also have Cubs and Sox talk, status quo. The Sox keep on winning thrillers. Now, the Cubs did win a thriller. I don't know if you turned away from it, but Chris Bryant was taken out of yet another game. We'll get to all of that. Waddle's got his Bears list, so we've got a lot to do. Three easy ways to listen. AM 1000 on the AM side for ESPN 1000. There's 100.3 HD2, the new way on the FM side, and, of course, the ESPN Chicago app.
Waddle and Sylvie.
Podcasts are ready on the all-new ESPN Chicago app.
ESPN 1000, Chicago's home for sports.
Andrew Myers tweeted us, at Waddle and Sylvia, at TWaddle87. He included Bleck on there, at Chris Bleck. Abdallah's there as well. Andrew Myers says, so we just forgot about this, huh? And how it looked. You talk about it, but Sylvie, just go Google it. And he's showing me the scene outside of Wrigley Field. Remember how when the number changed outside in the marquee, I don't even think there was a TV there. Mm. A lot of people, I think, were watching on their phones and stuff. Bleck, you commented that you were there at that time. It was like an unofficial gathering spot, as it's been before. You know, the alderman's been very anti-gathering at Wrigley officially. Remember, they built that whole, what do they call it, Doug?
Plaza?
Yeah, the plaza. What's a plaza sponsor? It's it starts with a G, I want to say.
Gallagher Way.
Gallagher Way. And, like, that would be a really cool area to, like...
That's going
to
hold about 600 people.
Well, not 600, a couple thousand.
No. Well, you mean Gallagher Way specifically?
Yeah.
But the spillover in the streets that night...
Oh, yeah.
It was basically anything east of Halstead, all the way through past where the ballpark was. Those streets were all closed.
Was that a celebration after they had won, or was that showing the game there?
They weren't showing.
People
were following on their phones.
Right.
Or you could kind of see into the bars that you could kind of see into the TVs.
How many people did they say was there at the time?
I don't remember, but it was insane.
65,000?
Yeah.
It was insane.
And I told you guys the other day when we were talking about the Deer District, in 2003, when the Cubs looked like they were going to beat the Marlins to get to the World Series, for games 6 and 7, the crowds outside of Waveland in the left field area, people were just gathering there. Several thousand people.
There's a difference between several thousand and 65,000.
Well, but the point is, Waddle, is this is an organized thing.
Right.
Those people were gathering organically before it was a thing.
Right.
You know, there's no official watch party. Like, my point is the politicians don't want Wrigley to have the monopoly on the gathering. They want Bernie's to be full. They want Murphy's to be full. They want Cubby Bear to be full. You know, all Deuces and Dimes. They want all these places to be full and not just the gargantuan Cubs being.
Where's Deuces? I'd like to drop by.
Isn't that where Carmen and Yurko did opening day from?
What's that?
He made a Deuce.
I said, where's Deuces? I'd like to.
No, I know. I'm just saying.
Mike in Lombard here on ESPN 1000. Save us, Mike.
Hey, guys. I came up from Lombard. I'm from Milwaukee, and I was part of that 65,000 crazy crowd. It was more like 75, like you said. 65 to watch the game, then 10,000 on the peripheral. I could not get into that 65,000.
Were you counting yourself? Do you know officially that it was 75?
1, 2, 3, 4, 5.
74,999. But anyway, the bar was your stack. You couldn't get in the bar to watch the game either. But we just watched through another bar through three windows, and it was just beautiful. You could not get in because everyone was in the bars. It was 50 deep to get in. It's just amazing. And for a long time, suffering Wisconsin fan, it's been 50 years. I remember the Bucks game, so it was phenomenal. A lot of cannabis. I shouldn't say that, but
it's totally fine.
People were having a good time. It was more like a party.
Oh yeah!
Thank God they won. That's all I can tell you. Right, North Carolina.
I have a question about the Deer District. They kept showing it looked like, and maybe this was just the way it looked on the camera. It looked like the crowd is right up against the building where the game's going on. Are they blocking exits? How does everyone get out of the building after that?
There's 15 feet between there's like horses between 15 feet between the crowd and the entrance to the Fiserv Arena because we're high-fiving people coming out like an hour after the game because they taped the ceremony. So that was an extra bonus. You know, people were crazy coming out, high-fiving. It was just nuts. It was just crazy. That's all I can tell you.
All right, Mike.
We're still cannabis.
I found a Bulls fan back in the Jordan days. How's that sound?
You were a Bulls fan back in the Jordan days?
No. I felt good Bulls fan back in the Jordan days where you guys were crazy.
What Giannis did... This is like people think that when I go and defend Michael, that it's just because I'm a Michael sycophant, which I am. But it's not just because of that. I am easily telling you that Giannis's finals is one of the all time greats and rivals a lot of what Michael did. What he did from 3 weeks ago.
Well, he was a question mark to even be able to play, right?
So he like the theme of this. postseason was injuries. Injuries knocked out everybody. Trae Young missed a couple of games in the Eastern Conference.
He missed one and then played, I think, in the final game, but was not himself.
And like everybody, Greeny was just going through it. All these guys. So not only did this guy overcome his own injury, which people thought at the time, watching the way it hyperextended, that maybe he was going to need surgery, that this was going to be like a torn ACL or something like that. And it was just the hyperextension, which still a lot of people say is like a 2 to 4 week injury. No one knew if he would play game one, and he came out and he did some things athletically, but he still didn't look smooth. And since game one, here are his numbers. He went 42, 12 and 3 blocks in game two, 41, 13 and 6 in game three. Game four, 26, 14, 8 plus 3 steals and 2 blocks. Game six, 32, 9, and 6. I'm sorry, that's game five. And game six was 50, 14, and 5. One of the greatest all-time NBA Finals performances ever in a single game. Michael, as I texted Carmen was going through his all-time great NBA Final performances. And he left off the 55 points Michael scored in game four of the 93. What made that even more special, it was in the midst of him scoring 4 straight games of 40 points or more against Charles Barkley. And like Giannis is a comp because Giannis had 3 of these games where he scored 40 points or more. Not in a row, but coming off a knee injury and winning 4 straight after being down 2 love, this is one for the record books.
I would say in there were so many things to be impressed by him to talk about. But what he did at the free throw line to me was incredible. He was 17 of 19. He shot 90% from the free throw line in a closeout game where you knew he had to be better than he had been over the course of the entire season shooting free throws. He took a weakness and actually made it a strength in the most important time.
Right, right. I'm surprised you're giving him credit because you usually like to say I don't give the big guys credit for dunks. So like it's an open 15-footer. Well, it's an open 15-footer that he should be able to make.
At it.
Right. Lately, he has stunk.
He doesn't shoot the ball well from the perimeter as well. I mean, like the fact that they gave him. I don't know what Monty Williams. I heard the guys talking about this earlier today. Didn't you feel also that they did not have a great approach to trying to stop him, and it was very difficult to because he's incredible. But you talk about like the Giannis wall that people try to build. You keep seeing him. You know, being left alone with Ayton, and Ayton was just not. He's too young and he's not athletic enough to try to guard him.
Right, right. And then I want to get into the your favorite guys. Who are like the most likable guys? Carmen did that. But the one thing, and someone commented on Twitch, that you always got to bring up LeBron. And this is hypocritical because that's always my argument with the national media. That whenever LeBron does something good, they always default to Michael. It's got to be compared to Michael. But here's why that I've always said what LeBron has done isn't even close to Michael. You saw in Giannis's first finals, he did something LeBron's not done. He had a better NBA finals than any NBA finals LeBron James has ever been in. He had a better clinching game than any clinching game that LeBron has ever been in. And if you want to be the best, it shouldn't be overtaken so quickly. So my point is here I watch this different basketball player do exactly what a lot of people who have criticized LeBron want him to do. Put a team on his back. There's no 1A guy. You have a 2 in Middleton. And you were down 2 love. And when you were down 2 love, you took the team on your back and you did whatever it took to win. You blocked shots. You finished alley-oops. You made threes. You scored lots of points. You rebounded the basketball. And again, if you're the best, and that's why I'm always been critical of what are we trying to fit here into this narrative? What LeBron has done doesn't rival Michael. What Giannis did in this series rivals Michael better than anything I've ever seen LeBron James do. LeBron James, many times in the NBA Finals, wasn't even the best player on the floor. The undisputed best player on the floor this entire series was Giannis Antetokounmpo. And it's not even close.
Amen, brother.
312-332-3776. If you want to weigh in, and who is, the most likable player in sports currently? The guy that you say isn't on a Chicago team, but you circle him and you love that guy. 312-332-3776.
You're listening to Waddle and Sylvie on ESPN 1000.
Chicago's home for sports.
Follow at Waddle and Sylvie and at TWaddle87 on Twitter.
I'm not anti-LeBron, as some in the Twitch, including my guy Kev, think I am. I'm just anti-recklessly putting people as the greatest just because it's good. That's all I'm saying. And that's all I've ever raged against with LeBron. Okay, really good. Really, really good. But again, why are we having the best ever debate? My point is, here a guy a year after LeBron wins a championship comes around and has a better NBA Finals than anything LeBron has ever done in the NBA Finals. Would you disagree that Giannis has had a better NBA Finals than any of the other LeBron James NBA Finals?
You know, my memory's not great, but I don't recall a final series where LeBron collectively over the course of the entire series did exactly what Giannis did. I mean, there have been moments for sure. But again, like even last night, I mean, this was Giannis and everybody else. He had 50 of the 105 points. I wrote this down as well. He had 14 of their team's 53 rebounds.
It's incredible.
I mean, he did everything that superstars. I don't recall. LeBron James is a great basketball player. I don't recall him having a final series that was as this impressive individually.
The answer would be 2016. LeBron in that final series that went seven games and the Cavs beat the Warriors in game seven. And he had the block, obviously, but Kyrie's the one that hit the shot for the Cavs to win it. LeBron had 30 points, 11 rebounds, 9 assists, and almost 3 steals per game plus 2 blocks per for the series. So,
but that's good, but that's not the best. That's not better than what Giannis did.
I'm adding context to what Waddle asked. He said, like, I don't know, and I'm just saying, like, that's where people would point. They would point to that series.
That's the closest example.
And again, Giannis had 3 games coming off a knee injury in which he scored 40 or more, including the clinching game in which he scored 50.
Okay, let me ask a question that may create even more pissed off people. Do you factor into the equation the quality of the opponent as well? Because that Warriors team better than this Suns.
Right, and coming back from 3-1 against that Warriors team was monumental.
Yeah.
And it cost me and you monumental amounts of money with Cap and Boyle, right?
We had to take them out to dinner. That's fun.
But Cap went top shelf bottles of wine, which I guess he can, but I think he really kind of
just... Which is odd because he's really not a drinker.
No.
That was just a penalizing move by him.
No, and again, like, people think that it's an anti-LeBron thing. I am anti just vaulting guys up to the best ever simply because you're stuck in the moment. And I don't believe I'm stuck in the moment with what Giannis did. I think what Giannis has done on a team that really didn't have another superstar. Middleton is really good, and if you watched Middleton here, you probably come away thinking that Middleton's way better than you ever thought he was. The way he can get his shot at any time. He's their closer, too. Silky smooth. Really, really, really good
play. I think he only had, like, I mean, what did he have? He was 6 of 10, maybe, from the field last night, but did make some important buckets down the stretch.
But like, and then LeBron, a lot of his career, had Dwayne Wade and Chris Bosh to lean on, Kyrie to lean on. But what he did in 16, I'm not disparaging. I am simply saying that, look, every LeBron argument is zero to Michael. So when someone comes along and quickly, a new guy, 26-year-old, he knows he's been in the league for 8 years, comes along and does something that I've not seen LeBron do. LeBron's never done that in the finals. He was the best player on the court every game. And Giannis, to me, this is more of a pro Giannis thing. And a let's slow down on pronouncing guys the greatest ever just because we're thrilled with the moments.
There were two themes here for me, or there were several themes. Like, I thought Giannis, as you've described, was historically good. I thought what you saw defensively from Holiday was game changing. I thought Bobby Portis played a nice role, not just last night, but in the entire series.
Well, yeah, we got to get to that, too.
I think what you saw was the championship medal of a Bucks team. Remember, again, in Game 4, they were down 6 to start the fourth quarter, and the deficit grew to 9. In Game 5, what were they down after 1? 15, 16, 18 points? Last night, they were down 47-42 at the half, right?
Right. And that the only thing I did right last night, gambling-wise, and I even said on the show that I liked the Suns, but at half, the way I watched the game and that they were still within 5 despite Middleton not having a great game and a lot of the bad shooting night from Jrue Holiday, I told you guys in the text chat, I go, hey, the Bucks are plus 100 right now. They were what?
So
like minus 200 going into the game. Just being down 5 at home got you that. And like I hopped on them and I put a few bucks down on the Bucks at the half.
So they showed you that they had the capacity over the last 3 games to actually take that adversity, handle the adversity, and respond to it. Conversely, you look at the Suns and you say, young team, first time Ayton and Booker had ever been in the postseason, not just in the NBA Finals. I believe it's the first time they'd ever been in the postseason. They couldn't close anything out. 9-point lead in the fourth quarter in Game 4, 18-point lead after 1 in the first in Game 5, the first quarter, and last night they had the halftime lead by 5 as well. So you give the Milwaukee Bucks all the credit in the world for finding a way to face that adversity and overcome. And you, if you're a Suns fan, you look at it and go, yeah, maybe they let one slip away here, but certainly something to point at in terms of growth going forward.
John in River Grove, you're on ESPN 1000. What's up, John?
Hello.
Hello, John.
So you're talking about the most likable player. I would go with Patrick Mahomes, I think.
That was my first blush reaction, that what Patrick Mahomes has been able to do, just as this young player who barely played his first year, and that not a lot of, and obviously there's more angst with us because of what happened in that draft, but right. Man, is he super likable.
I'm a football guy first, so not only is he likable as a player, he's likable as a guy, he's involved in the community. I mean, Giannis is comparable in terms of, you know, just the humbled nature of his personality. I thought it was a really difficult web poll question to answer.
Yeah. So Carmen said, who's the most likable superstar in professional sports right now? Giannis, Mahomes, Otani, or other? And I would add another one in here. Not one that won't get a lot of public support, but gets my support. And the question is, in your like, who's your most likable superstar? This is all for us. It's very subjective. I love Tom Brady now. I love him. He's old. He's great. He's funny.
He likes the football to be a few pounds less than maybe.
I mean, he's very polarizing too. Like some people, well, he cheated and he did, you know. And I used to be a Manning guy.
I was just going to say, I like the fact that you're willing to open your brain to new thoughts, because that would have never come out of your mouth 5-6 years ago. I told you the other day, I think that he's finally starting to show you, like, that he has got a different side to him that is appealing.
Like Peyton Manning always showed on Saturday Night Live. James and Gurney, you're on ESPN 1000. What's up, Jimmy?
Hey, boys. Good to hear you again. So real quick, 2 points, and then I got a question. So I think Bobby Portis relaxed that whole team last night. Just his attitude, he was smiling. He took the pressure off. Everybody was really struggling. Secondly, Giannis, I've been watching. I'm 48 just like you, Sylvie, and I watched some of the Lakers. Obviously, I watched MJ, and that performance, man, wow, and that kid's only 26. Having said that, is Giannis being locked up in a small market with that deer district, is that going to change a couple of these superstars' minds in the next 3 or 4 years to go to Milwaukee? Very interesting, man.
It's a very good question, James.
At first blush, my response would be no.
Yeah, but I wonder, here's what I want.
I may be wrong. If I thought about it, I may change my mind, but my first initial response is no.
Well, and I want to ask you about how the general managers may look at it, too. Like, yes, guys will still want to team up, but will general managers not force it or try to grow their own team like the Bucks have grown. And I want to get to that and also play you some of the stuff from Bobby Portis. It was earth-shattering. What Cameron Payne and Bobby Portis did in spurts in this NBA Finals when we watched them as players on our Bulls team. And Bobby Portis is a hero. I want to play you some of that coming up next.
It's Waddle and Sylvie.
Hi.
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 Follow us on the gram at Waddle and Sylvie and at ESPN underscore Chicago. This is Chicago's home for sports. ESPN 1000.
You know what has to happen in order for the blueprint of the Milwaukee Bucks to, you know, to spread around the NBA like it's the new trend?
They've got to beat a team that isn't hurt. And I'm trying to be a wise ass, but at the same time, I mean, like, you know, I mean, there are a ton of people that are going to say to you in terms of the formula for championships, they're going to tell you, well, I'll still go the route that the Nets did.
See, I was going to be even more of a smart ass and say, well, it would take other teams taking Anthony Bennett number one in the NBA draft, you know, to build a team this way. Like, Giannis was at 15. Like, look at the players who were drafted before Giannis. Like, Big Cat was tweeting out someone's take saying, yeah, I can't even pronounce his name. He's going to be a career bench warmer, you know, and he was so skinny. They showed that picture, how skinny he was compared to how he looks now, all the work he put in. But, like,
the MVP of the league this year was a second-round pick.
I know that, but I still believe that it happens. Steph going number 7, Giannis going number 15, Jokic going 40, whatever, 42 or whatever it was. Those are still the anomalies.
Mm-hmm.
Those are still the anomalies. And it will take 14 other dumb teams in order for you to get Giannis at 15. Do you know what I'm saying? Like, I still think the best way to do it is you know, going and finding him in free agency, because we've seen how number 7s have panned out, for goodness sake. Wendell Carter's already gone. Lauri Markkanen's probably going to be gone. Kobe White is hurt, and he's not on the road to stardom. Those were the 7th picks.
Listen, when we're having this discussion about how you construct your basketball team or what's the best way, and I don't mean any disrespect to the two teams that just met in the postseason, but some are going to argue if injuries hadn't beset upon the Lakers and the Nets, you were looking at a different finals. In the context of how you build your team, I still believe that there will be a majority of folks who believe the quickest way to get there and win it is to. And it's hard because you got to find a way to fit 3 superstars or LeBron and AD together. Right.
You still have to draft well. Absolutely. Yes. I'm not saying not draft. I'm saying that not going out and recruiting or not going out and having players team up, being anti-team up,
right,
if you're a general manager, isn't the right way to go, because it is harder,
yes,
to get the number 15 overall pick to be an MVP like Giannis.
And again, people will suggest to you that had Kyrie not gotten hurt and James Harden not gotten hurt,
sure,
they're
sure
not even in the finals. So, like, look, it's refreshing to see a team that is filled with homegrown guys for the most part, or guys that wanted to stay in the small market. But I don't think that that's going to change the approach of the NBA in general.
Luck and breaks, not to the extent of this year. This year was crazy. It happens every year.
Absolutely.
Like when Kawhi got his, and remember 2 years ago, we're pronouncing Kawhi the best player in the league after his run with Toronto. You know, there were injuries along the way there for the opponents that they played. Think about what happened to Klay Thompson, and think about what happened to Kevin Durant,
yeah,
in the NBA Finals. Like even LeBron's 16 run when it was 3-1, do they win the series if there's not a suspension? If Draymond's not suspended, you know, like there are always these
every
breaks.
Every championship season is filled with good fortune, regardless of sport.
Right. And that's why, like Giannis, I understand where you're coming from, but you just sort of say he took advantage of the situation and himself overcame an
injury. Absolutely.
Which is pretty incredible.
And it doesn't water down or belittle the championship in any way, shape, or form. I'm just saying, in the context of how you build your franchise in the NBA, I don't think there's going to be this massive deviation from trying to pair superstars
right,
because of how the Bucks did it this year.
I would love to hear two superstars who want to play together with the Bulls.
Yeah, of course.
You know what I mean? Like,
right. No. We're going to draft and build from within.
Homegrown.
Yeah, no.
Let Kobe White develop.
Yeah, no, that's not going
to listen happen. To this. In 2013, when Giannis was drafted, Anthony Bennett was the number one overall pick. Your guy, Victor Oladipo, was two. Otto Porter, number three. Who did Michael take at number four? Cody Zeller.
Of course he
did. Out of Indiana. Alex Len was the fifth overall pick. Nerlens Noel was number six.
Good shot blocker.
Ben McLemore was drafted number seven. Look at KCP was drafted eight. Look at all these guys who were. Kelly Olynyk was drafted before Giannis. I mean, again, it's shocking how bad some of these guys. Now, it's hard to find those guys and to tell that Giannis was going to be that good, but they're also pros.
I did not know what was Giannis's background when he was drafted.
Well, he was what, 18 years old, right? Okay. He was coming over from Europe,
right?
So he's very, very young, very, very raw, and very, very skinny. He was on my flight, if you remember. I always told you the story. The Bucks drafted him. We're on the way to Italy through Frankfurt, Germany.
Right.
And the Bucks just made the draft had just happened. There's this big guy in the United Club. You gave me your upgrade ticket, so we got to go to the United Club.
Because I'm a good guy.
You were. And that's when you were like flying 100,000 miles a year or something like that.
I'm still paying for that physically.
And two guys who were fans of the show came up to me. And then, like, 10 minutes later, I see them going up to this guy, and they're getting autographs. And I go, hey, who is that? And they go, that's the new guy the Bucks took who's Greek. His name is Giannis. I'm like, oh, that's cool. And we saw him board our flight. Like, I wish I could go back in time and get a picture with him then. A 2013, fresh out of the draft, Giannis.
Guess what his stat lines were? Let's just go rebounds and points per game in his first 3 years.
Well, he did show flashes his rookie year. So points in his rookie year. I'll go 15 and 7.
4.4 and 6.8 points per game.
Pretty incredible.
4.4 rebounds, total rebounds, and 6.8 points per game the following year in the 14-15 season.
He went up to double digits then. I'm going to go, then he went to about 14 points per game, 8 rebounds.
6.7 rebounds and 12.7 points per game. Right. Getting close. And then in year three?
Then did he explode and go 18 and 9?
Closer, but 7.7 rebounds per game, 16.9 points per game. So you saw gradual improvement, and then in the 16-17 season, he averaged 9 rebounds and 23 points per game, and it was to the moon from there.
The Greek freak. Banks in North Park here on ESPN 1000. What's up, Banks?
How you guys doing? I just wanted to make two quick points. One being Lauri Markkanen. For Chicago athletes that I like, if they're not going to return or if there's a possibility that they're not, I like to think about what team I would like them to be on. And I think he would be a great fit in Dallas along with Doncic. And my second take is a sleeper in the draft. His name is Nemaz Keita. He plays for Utah State. The guy's a 7-foot ball of lightning. Let me know what you guys think.
And is he a second? Where is he projected
to
go?
We have no chance at him in the first round.
Well, we don't have the Bulls don't have a first round.
Right.
Definitely second round.
Yeah, yeah. And look, we've seen that AK is open to doing that, taking players like that. That's what they did in Denver. And look, their stash guy from a year ago is coming over this year. So
Siminovich? Did I get that?
Yeah,
name?
Yeah. Marco Siminovich. I believe that's how you pronounce it. That's the way it looks.
Just throwing the hook in the water, see if I could catch it.
3-3-2-3-7-7-6. So here's the question: is Chris Bryant hurt again, or are the Cubs just protecting him? 312-332-3776. And the White Sox have another thriller on the South Side. We'll get to some baseball. If you still want to weigh in on the NBA, 3-3-2-3-7-7-6.